Welcome to the Comic Book Rundown.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Comic Book Rundown. I'm your host, Joe, and yeah, it's just me again. Like I said before in the past, just gonna be doing these episodes. I don't want to bring Ron in, because especially when I'm gonna be doing multiple issues, trying to get through some of these comics quicker, and this is one of them, because I'm covering Blue Beetle on this episode, and I'm covering about 12 issues. 11 issues. It's issues, Blue Beetle issues 9 through 19. They came out from DC Comics in 1986 through 1987. The writers were Len Wein and Joey Cavalieri. The art was done by Paris Collins, Del Barreras, and Ross Andrew. I think that's how you say it. A-N-D-R-U. Inks by Del Barreras. Danny Bulenadi. You know what? I even practiced these names beforehand. Still can't do it right. Letters by John Costanza. And colors by Gene D'Angelo. So, as I said when I did Firestorm, I'm trying to get through, for DC-wise, I'm trying to get through a lot of the books between Legends and Millennium. I'm going to try and do a lot of the, just the titles in the quicker succession. And then when we get to, like, a big crossover event or a big event, I'll bring Ron in, we'll cover that together. And that way, we have the big events done. He can read those. Unless, of course, it's like the Batman Nightfall or Superman, Death of Superman stuff. Like, it's the big events in the individual titles, which, I mean, we'll get a lot of those in the 90s and then 2000s moving forward. But, like, in these 80s issues, we don't have a lot of big events individual titles-wise. At least none that I can remember. Now, as I'm reading through, maybe that'll change, but we'll see. But here, as we start out with these issues, issues number 9 and 10, they are both Legends tie-ins. So we start out in issue 9, where Blue Beetle does some showboating as he takes out a handful of hoodlums, robbing an old lady. But he is in for a real surprise when, after he is done with them, the lady starts hitting him with her purse. Thanks to G. Gordon Godfrey, everyone hates heroes at the moment. And you can tell that I was in a Futurama phase when I was writing these notes, because I wrote, "He cheeses it before the cops get here." That's something that Bender says all the time. In the suburbs, we are introduced to Angela Reverie. There we go. She is the receptionist at Cord Inc. and also the niece of Kronos, the time thief. Apparently, Batman kicked his ass some time ago and he had to lay low to recuperate. Now the time has come to get back out there and steal time-related items. I think that's what he does. I must admit, my knowledge of Kronos at this time isn't very much. Anyway, Angela is getting ready to call the cops, and Kronos uses a special stopwatch to freeze her in time. And then he pieces out. We catch up with Blue Beetle as he gets back to his hideout somewhere near Lake Michigan. He's not happy about Godfrey turning the people against superheroes, and contemplates about hanging up the suit and just being Ted Kord. Later, at Kord Inc., Ted walks into his second-in-command, one Melody Case. She is watching a news report coming from the president saying that all superheroes are banned. See our Legends coverage in episodes 449 through 454 for more on that. The news reports then goes into an interview with Godfrey, and as he is talking about being a negative role model for kids, Ted, the heroes being a negative role model for kids, that is, Ted turns off the TV, which angers Melody. They get into a bit of a disagreement about Godfrey and superheroes, and Melody basically tells Ted to piss off. Later on, Melody comes to Ted to tell him that Angela hasn't shown up for work. He makes the unilateral decision to go check up on her, since this is completely unlike her to not show up and not even call. Melody disagrees with Ted. But Ted throws around the "I'm the boss" trope and basically ignores her. When he gets to Angela's house, he peers through a window and sees her paralyzed, so he busts down the door and lets himself in. He is able to free her from the paralyzing trance she was in, and she reveals that her uncle is Kronos, and that she has been stealing from Kord Inc. for some time now. Ted isn't bothered by the stealing, he's just happy that Angela is alright. But when he goes to call the police about Kronos, he makes the decision to don the costume once again. Speaking of Kronos, we go out to the warehouse district to find out that he has a couple of guys move a bunch of clocks into a warehouse, and then he kills them to keep them quiet. Other things going on in these issues that sets things up for later. A geologist named Cassandra Sharp is out in the Mojave Desert and gets caught up in the huge sandstorm. After the storm passes, a helicopter swoops in and scoops her up. These guys were paid by someone to get Cassandra specifically. We see Ted, an engineer slash scientist from Star Labs named Murray Takamoto, and a foreman named Kurt Calhoun watch as a new metal alloy they have made gets put to the stress test. It doesn't hold up to the pressure, and Takamoto reveals that the head of Star Labs will be coming to the lab in 2 days to see his progress. Down at Chicago Metropolitan Police Headquarters, Precinct 21, that is, Lieutenant Maxwell Fisher is really mad about them costume vigilantes. And on Pago Island, the place where Dan Garrett, the first Blue Beetle, found the Scarab, we meet Conrad Carapax. He was buried in a cave-in a few issues back and is trying to find a way out. He comes across a metal door and is unable to open it at this moment. In between issues, Blue Beetle fights Kronos for the first time in issue 4 of Legends. So like I said, go back to our Legends coverage, 449, episodes 449 through 454 for all of that. So back to Blue Beetle books. We start out with an ambulance rushing Angela into the infirmary at Kord Incorporated, because after reading these 11 issues, something tells me that Ted Kord knew that most of the experiments that took place on site would backfire and hurt someone, so he wanted to keep from having to pay those hospital fees. Ted explains that Angela has epilepsy and that he found her at her house after an episode hit. She plays along, but after everyone walks away, she asks why he said that. He explains that he was keeping her safe, so they didn't find out who her uncle was and what she has been doing at the company. After leaving her to the doctors, Ted goes up to his office so that he can get back into costume and go after Kronos again. Blue Beetle goes back to Angela's to look for clues about Kronos and finds a receipt for a warehouse rental. He also finds the open end of two police officers' guns because the lady next door narked on Blue Beetle. He is able to get away and back to the bug, his ship, and makes his way to the warehouse. When he gets there, he confronts Kronos again, to no avail. Kronos has home field advantage and a ton of time-related tricks up his sleeve, like an hourglass that releases a mini sandstorm, but also doubles as a salt shaker, I guess. Blue Beetle caught him putting salt on his sub sandwich, which I think speaks more about Kronos' taste buds, or he needs to change bodegas. Regardless, Kronos gets away again and Blue Beetle gives chase. The battle wages on all over Chicago until Blue Beetle is able to knock Kronos off of his flying pedestal thing into a fountain. He eventually is able to take him down, but because this is also in the middle of Legends, all the civilians are throwing trash at Blue Beetle, forcing him to leave before the cops can come and arrest Kronos, and honestly, him as well. Elsewhere, Melody is out and about, complaining in her head about vigilantes, when her purse gets grabbed by a street kid. Melody catches up to her, but gets surprised by how young she is. I'm assuming she's probably like 16, but I'm in my 40s, so younger than 25 is a kid to me anyway. So the kid gets away again, and without looking, runs into traffic as an 18-wheeler comes barreling down on her. Somehow, she survived, and Melody is able to get her to a hospital. After some time, the doctor informs Melody that the kid is stable, but the injuries were too severe and that she probably won't make it through the night. She goes to see the kid, but instead she sees her being kidnapped by a couple of guys, who tase Melody and then go about their business. On to issue 11, where we see Blue Beetle stopping some jewelry thieves by having the bug grab their getaway car and fly it around town. At one point, he even ducks them into, I assume, Lake Michigan, and how he didn't murder them by doing that is beyond me. He then drops them off at the police station, and we once again see Lieutenant Fisher mad at them vigilantes. Later, Ted walks into work to see Angela packing up her desk. She is quitting because of the whole Kronos thing, but Ted refuses to accept that. He tells her that she is staying put, which she is happy about. After all that, Ted goes to see Melody and runs into Lieutenant Fisher, talking to her about the events of the last issue with the purse snatcher. As Fisher is leaving, he gives Ted a mouthful. Apparently he thinks Ted has something to do with Dan Garrett's death out on Pago Island. No idea what that is about because there was no issue citation given, which is a little disappointing. I wouldn't mind reading that at some point, which, I mean, honestly, it's probably just the issues prior to issue 9 where I started, but whatever. Ted apologizes to Melody about the fight that they had about Godfrey, and they seem to make up. And I guess they are also a couple? I'm not entirely sure. The issue doesn't really spell it out. Ted then heads off to the metallurgy lab to meet with Takamoto and Calhoun. They are planning another test of the metal, but before they can pour out the molten metal to form, the cauldron pours prematurely and goes all over Calhoun, killing him instantly. Oh, what's that? He's not dead? That makes no sense, but okay. As he is being rushed to the hospital, an ambulance carrying him makes a sudden stop. Ted gets out to see what's going on, and two guys in masks and guns greet him. They instruct everyone out of the ambulance, and then a helicopter with a magnet attached flies in and picks up the van with Calhoun inside. The masked men hop in, and the helicopter goes flying off, leaving Ted no choice but to follow in the bug. He somehow put a tracking device on either the van or one of the guys. Like a lot of the other stuff in these issues, it's not made abundantly clear. In New York, it gets revealed that the hero known as Mento is behind the kidnappings. I say hero, but he has gone a bit loony and has a grudge against Gar Logan, the changeling of the Teen Titans, who is also his adopted son. So he decided to perform some Weapon X-type experiments on 6 people that were near death or dying that he had kidnapped. We saw one last issue and one in issue 9. I'm curious if we saw the other 4 people get nabbed in earlier issues. By infusing a metal called promethium into their bones and the calling, and then calling this new team Hybrid. The team's first mission is to stop Blue Beetle from saving Calhoun, who is to be their seventh team member. So the remaining six jump into action, essentially forcing the bug to drop the ambulance and then forcing the ship down. With the ambulance now free, Hybrid disregards Blue Beetle in favor of their prize. However, they come face to face with the Teen Titans, and while I don't want to label Hybrid as a nothing team, the Teen Titans and Blue Beetle take down the six members of Hybrid with minor scrapes and bruises. That is the majority of issue 12, so I will skip over all that to talk about things this book is setting up for later. First up, we see Fisher talking to his captain about taking some time off, and it looks like he's planning on going to Pago Island. He has a real hard-on for Ted's connection to Dan Garrett. Speaking of Pago Island, Carapax has decided that the best way to open a door that is locked is with C4. And once on the other side, he finds a giant metal suit. Back at Star Labs, Takamoto and Melody are talking about Ted never being around. Melody thinks... Is it Star Labs? I got Star Labs written down. Maybe it was... Maybe I should have been Cord Inc. I should have took that in notes. Sorry about that. Melody thinks it's her fault, but because it's the 80s and men don't care about women's feelings, Takamoto changes the subject to explaining to his boss why the project has been scrapped. Good news is he doesn't actually have to explain it. The bad news is his boss already knows. The issue ends with Mento using his mental powers to watch his team get taken down. So he moves up the timetable on Calhoun and uses all the promethium liquid metal that is all over him, and with his mental powers, creates a seventh member of Hybrid, a Colossus ripoff. Named Prometheus, actually. Issue 11 kicks off with our heroes getting their asses handed to them by the latest member of Hybrid. Calhoun now going by Prometheus, but not the Prometheus you may be thinking about if you are a DC fan. That one doesn't show up until the 2000s. Anyway, after defeating the Teen Titans and Blue Beetle, Prometheus captures Changeling and frees his teammates, and then Mento makes them all disappear. Back at the headquarters of Dayton Industries, Mento is introducing Prometheus to the rest of Hybrid. This is a perfect time to go over the rest of the team, and we have Gorgon, Harpy, Behemoth, Pterodon, Sirico, S-C-I-R-O-C-C-O, and Touch and Go. Mento chains up Changeling as the Teen Titans and Blue Beetle figure out where to go. It's Jericho that is able to deduce that Mento took Changeling to Dayton Industries. So they are off, and when they get there, wouldn't you know it, they are ambushed by Hybrid. The heroes are able to defeat Hybrid for a second time, as Mento is having a full-on breakdown about his dead wife, Elastigirl, Rita Farr. Changeling is trying to talk some sense into him, but nothing he says seems to be getting through. Just then, Blue Beetle and the Titans come to the rescue. But before anything can happen, Mento grabs his team and disappears out of there. We see Fisher talking to a boat captain about chartering a boat to Pago Island, which I should point out is near Cuba, and Fisher is in Chicago. Let's just say I don't think it's going to be a weekend getaway. Speaking of Pago Island, Carapax is fooling around with all the electric equipment, and he seems to think that the helmet he found will let him control the giant robot. And in a way, he's not completely wrong. He can't control it, but that's only because when he threw the switch, his mind got transferred to the robot as his body burnt to a crisp. We start out this next issue with the Teen Titans helping Blue Beetle put the bug back together. After some more chitter-chatter and a recap of the previous couple of issues, we see Blue Beetle heading back to Kord Incorporated, where he has to be Ted Kord again. More on that later, as we go now to Fisher and the boat that has found its way to Pago Island, with some Game of Thrones level travel going on. As the crew prepare to make landfall, something from under the water attacks the ship, sending it hurling to the island coast. The crew is dead sure that the famous curse of Pago Island is to explain for what just happened. Fisher thinks someone was just asleep at the wheel, and the captain agrees. But when everyone goes to the radio room to try and call for help, all they find is the smashed up remains of both the radio and the crew member that was stationed here. And when they get off the boat and onto the island proper, the crew's fears are not alleviated at all when they start disappearing one by one. Other things going on. Over in France, at the Cornelius Krieg Research Center, co-founder Dr. Klaus Cornelius shows up to discuss the whereabouts of Jeremiah Duncan, an ex-employee that just gets revealed to be working at Kord Incorporated. Duncan discovered a new compound while working at Cornelius Krieg and did not divulge its secrets before joining Kord Inc. Now Cornelius is sending a costume guy named Catalyst to kidnap him. I'm sure we'll get more on that in the future. Back in Chicago, Ted gets an earful from Melody about being a terrible CEO and also about missing their date the night before she storms out of his office telling him to do a better job. At Star Labs, Takamoto is getting chewed out by his boss, Garrison Slate, for giving Ted Inc. the Promethium Project, and I think he is just more mad that nothing came of it than Kord Inc. having a hand in it. Because of all that, though, Takamoto resigns. Later, he calls Ted to let him to tell him about his resignation, and Ted tries to offer him a job at Kord Inc., but he declines. Feeling sorry for his friend, lights a fire under Ted's ass, and now he's gonna do something to help out Melody. How one connects to the other is beyond me. Anyway, Ted decides to go see Lieutenant Fisher to see what he knows about the girl that got hit by the truck a few issues back. When he gets to the precinct, a detective informs Ted that Fisher is on vacation. Just before he leaves, Ted spies a map of Pago Island on Fisher's desk, causing him to freak out. On his way to Pago Island, Blue Beetle gives us a Cliff Notes version of how Ted Garrett died and how Ted Kord became Blue Beetle. They came to Pago Island to stop his Uncle Jarvis from conquering the world with his robot army. Dan spoke an ancient phrase that turned him into Blue Beetle and tore the robot army apart. To stop the Blue Beetle, Jarvis blew up his robot army but killed himself in the process. However, he did succeed, and as Blue Beetle lay dying, he had Ted promise to carry on the mantle, which he did. But before he could give Ted the Mystic Scarab, the ground beneath Blue Beetle collapsed and was then buried by the debris. Now with that backstory out of the way, Blue Beetle reaches the island and finds so many dead bodies. He eventually finds Fisher, and as he is trying to figure out what exactly is going on, Carapax, now a giant metal robot man, comes busting through a rock wall at the two men. Carapax presses his attack on Fisher, but Blue Beetle is there to save him by pulling him out of the way. The two men run into the nearby cave in search of Jarvis's lab, in the hopes that there might be something down there that can stop this indestructible man. On the way, Fisher reveals that he came to Pago Island in looking for the truth about Dan Garrett's death. What he found was Carapax's base camp, along with his journals detailing that he was also looking into what Garrett's connection to this island was. Fisher also reveals that he knows Blue Beetle's secret identity, just as they come upon the lab. Before they can figure out their next move, Carapax comes storming in. Blue Beetle springs into action, leaping to a higher level and shoving computer banks on top of him. And these are the 80s computers, so they're the size of a refrigerator and probably weigh twice as much. While Blue Beetle is distracting Carapax, Fisher is planting explosives around the room. Not the smartest idea, if you ask me, especially since he put the explosives on a timer. And because the computers didn't do much to Carapax, he was able to get up quickly and block the only exit. Now Blue Beetle and Fisher are trying to get some distance before the timer runs out. Unfortunately, they can't get far enough away and get caught up in the blast. Time passes and the two men come back to consciousness. Blue Beetle calls to the bug and they both climb aboard it just in time as Carapax digs himself out of the rubble. Blue Beetle tries attacking with some of the bug's gadgets, but nothing really does anything. So Fisher just suggests that they leave. He's a giant robot. Just leave him on the island and fly away. Blue Beetle can't find any fault in that logic. Apparently, the giant robot doesn't like the idea of being abandoned on an island, though. And to ensure that Carapax can't leave, Blue Beetle destroys the boat that Fisher was on that brought him to Pago Island. Conveniently, a control box of some kind with a cable wire just long enough for Carapax to throw and latch onto the bug with... to throw and latch onto the bug with and just strong enough for him to climb, falls in front of him after the boat blows up, and he does the thing I just said. Carapax breaks through the bug window and climbs aboard, and after some quick flying maneuvers, Blue Beetle is able to drop him out of the bug and into the sea below. As they fly home, Fisher says he wants to see Ted first thing Monday morning in his office. They have things to talk about, and I guess the next 3 hours will be flown in silence. Elsewhere in Chicago, Melody is interviewing a Mr. Randy Truman, a potential helper to pick up Ted's slack at the office and possibly elsewhere, wink wink. While Melody is talking to Truman, Jeremiah Duncan walks in looking for Ted with help he says only Ted can solve. Since Ted is not there, he heads out, leaving these two to whatever they plan on doing. Duncan leaves early, making plans to leave Chicago for good. Cornelius Craig have been hounding him recently, so he knows he is not safe here anymore. But as he goes to leave, Catalyst pops up in the back seat of his car and knocks him out. The most impressive power he has, though, is being a backseat driver, literally. Duncan's slumped body is in the driver's seat, and Catalyst is behind him, holding onto the steering wheel. I have no idea how he is hitting those pedals. Next we see them, Catalyst is guiding Duncan through the airport, toward a flight back to France. We also get Garrison Slate yelling at people at Star Labs, and Takamoto having trouble finding a new job. Lastly, some dumb-looking guy named Overthrow is mad about the military-industrial complex and is going to take it out on the corporate moguls. We get it. You hate big businesses. I'm sure there was no other way for you to get your point across. Issue 16 is, for the most part, a self-contained story. Some random guy in a ski mask stole a vial that contained an experimental cure for leukemia that he was going to use on himself. The problem is, Blue Beetle was chasing him and he dropped it after running into a homeless man. So for the next few nights, this guy tortures and kills homeless people trying to find the guy that he ran into to get the vial back. Blue Beetle stops him and learns that homelessness can affect anyone. That they really try to hammer that home in this issue. Really, the only other thing from this issue that I want to question is how many people this guy killed. Allegedly, the story takes place over maybe 3 nights, but the news and the newspapers make it out like he has been killing these people for a few weeks. Maybe I'm wrong, but like I said, it's a self-contained story. So on to the next one. We start out with the return of Dan Garrett. Like, for reals, I think. You never know with comic books. Anyway, he gets resurrected by the mystical Scarab, given a fancy new suit, and gets sent on his way from Pago Island to Chicago to kill Ted Kord. Speaking of Ted, he's getting yelled at by Melody Case again as he is leaving for an appointment with Lieutenant Fisher. They run into Randy Truman, whom Melody wants to make her assistant to help take some of the workload off of Ted's plate. Ted is fine with it, and as he heads out, he can't help but notice the sparks between Melody and Truman. But love isn't in the air completely, as Truman also has to head out on some errands. Melody heads back to her office and asks Angela to have Jeremiah Duncan see her at once. Angela informs her that no one has seen Duncan for the last few days. Overthrow has returned, and apparently he has access to Kord Incorporated, because he is suiting up down in the lower levels. He rambles on about the military-industrial complex, opposing the working class, as he jumps out in front of some security guards, and then starts throwing what he calls a unique plasma bombs, around. Outside in the parking lot, at the same time this is happening, Ted meets up with Fisher, who basically blackmails him into using Blue Beetle as a way to capture a bunch of criminals that didn't go to jail because of a technicality. Ted is shocked, but before he can tell him no way, Fisher drives off. Just then, the explosions from Overthrow starts to go off, prompting Ted to leap into action. Once he returns as Blue Beetle, he engages in battle with Overthrow, and the two go at it for a bit, with neither truly having the upper hand. With his agenda stalled, Overthrow powers up his boot jets and flies off, but Blue Beetle calls the bug in to pursue him, and is able to actually catch him in a net. But Overthrow has the last laugh. He tells Blue Beetle that one of the plasma bombs that he threw at him during their fight had the delayed detonation fuse in it, and it's set to go off any moment now, which would blow Kord Inc. to nothing. Not wanting to take the chance, Blue Beetle has to drop Overthrow to check on the threat, which it turns out is true, and he gets to it just in time. Once Blue Beetle gets rid of the bomb and back to where he let go of Overthrow, he has already disappeared. With all that out of the way, we catch up with Jeremiah Duncan, who is being manipulated into revealing what he did with the compound he hid from Cornelius Krieg. We see Murray Takamoto flying off to London for his new job that he got offered from a place called Statistical Occurrences Limited. Next, we find Garrison Slate looking over some files at Star Labs and then freaking out when he realizes that what they actually mean. He rushes down to the secret lower levels to tell the scientists to stop the project. But it turns out that the project has escaped. We see that the escaped project is a kid, and he is wandering the streets of Chicago after emerging from the sewers. Lastly, we find Ted Kord in his apartment contacting people in hopes of locating Jeremiah Duncan when the building starts to rock. When Ted looks out his window, he sees a deranged Dan Garrett Blue Beetle calling for a showdown with the current Blue Beetle. With Dan rampaging outside, Ted suits up. The face-off here is pretty one-sided, considering Dan has powers and all Ted has are gadgets that pale in comparison. As the fight rages on, we focus on the kid from the last issue that escaped from Star Labs, wandering the streets. He comes up to a police barricade that is trying to keep people away from the Beatles fighting. The boy is able to easily get past the cops, almost as if he was able to manipulate them. And then he sees the two men fighting and seems to recognize one of them. As for our hero, he is at the mercy of Dan, who is standing over him with a huge rock in his hands, ready to smash his head in. But Dan hesitates, giving Ted just enough time to call in the bug to escape. He doesn't get too far, though, as Dan comes crashing through the viewport. Ted is so mad. He has had to fix those viewport windows so many times recently. With that extra burst of anger, Ted is able to get the upper hand on Dan a bit, even going so far as to knocking the scarab away from him and grabbing it as it falls. That, however, turns out to be a mistake. Whatever power is coursing through that scarab, whatever power kept Dan alive or brought him back from the dead, isn't a power for good. The power will give itself to whoever kills the other, one. And while Ted is tempted by it at first, he is able to discard it. Dan is not, though, and presses his attack on Ted anew. Fisher shows up with the police force, and they open fire, trying to take Dan down, to no avail. All it really does is put them in harm's way. Ted, now acknowledging that this is really Dan, gets his second wind and goes in for an attack. He is able to knock Dan for a loop, but that doesn't last long, and Ted is quickly at Dan's mercy once again. Before Dan can deliver the final blow, the kid from earlier shows up and seems to unlock Dan's memories of being a hero. Dan hurls around at the scarab, and it is revealed that it is not a scarab, but a one-eyed tentacle creature thing with mind control-ish powers. It never got a name, and Dan called it a parasite. He then breaks the link that they had, which apparently what was keeping both of them alive. I don't know, because the parasite blew up and Dan died in Ted's arms again. But this time there was the creepy kid behind him. Speaking of dying, whatever was going on between Melody and Truman seems to have died in this issue when he blew her off to go do work when she asked him where he was when Overthrow attacked. You know, at least try to hide it, writers. You know, just do a little better job next time. And the other thing we get is Klaus Cornelius from Cornelius Krieg telling Catalyst to take care of Jeremiah Duncan since he won't give up where the compound he hid is. The thing is, though, I think they may try to reanimate the body. I don't know, who knows? So the final issue, I'll be talking about, starts out with Blue Beetle showing up at Star Labs in the office of Garrison Slate, just as he enters it. We then immediately flash back to earlier in the day, right after Dan Garrett died again. The creepy kid that was looming behind Ted passes out, just as a SWAT team and a STAR team descend on them. Slate is among the STAR team and explains that the kid escaped from a totally sterile environment in one of their labs, and that because he has no immunization factor, the polluted air is killing him. Although I feel like walking through the sewer was probably worse than just breathing in the air. While Blue Beetle is not 100% sure if that is true or not, he doesn't want to take the risk, so he lets Star Labs take the kid. And that brings us back to the beginning, and in my opinion, a waste of a first page. Slate basically threatens Blue Beetle, so he has to jump out the window to the bug for safety. Because at that same time, the security comes showing up with guns. So back at Court Inc., Ted uses Murray Takamoto's backdoor pass into Star Labs' computers to try and access files on the kid. He finds out that before Takamoto worked for Star, a biologist named Dr. Rose Beryl worked there. She spliced her genes and that of Dan Garrett's together to make this kid. But the kid did have a genetic defect, that being no natural immunization to common diseases. The kid was confined to the lower levels of the labs while Dr. Beryl worked to improve her experiments. Unfortunately, she went missing after an explosion in her lab destroyed all her research. Recently, a body washed up on a beach near Star Labs, LA, that matched the DNA of the kid. So Ted decides that if there is any possibility of Beryl being alive and saving this boy, then he will have to go, he will have to try to save him and try and find her. We go now to the West Coast, where Blue Beetle has figured out that Dr. Beryl would need special equipment to perform her experiments. So he searches the local databases using the bug system to try and narrow down where she might be. and he is able to narrow it down to one, Animus Explorations Unlimited. It's a good thing that he has the bug too, because the location of the facility is at the top of this random cliffside overlooking troubled waters at the bottom of the cliff. When Blue Beetle gets into the facility and starts snooping around, only to have the worst furniture from Beast Castle come alive to capture him. Seriously, all of the furniture starts to attack him and ultimately knocks him out. When he comes to, he is strapped to a chair and is now face to face with Dr. Beryl, who is now calling herself Dr. Animus, and is a little more robotic than human. Think the Vera Webster character from Superman 3 after she gets sucked into the supercomputer and becomes a cyborg, but with Iron Man's color scheme. Blue Beetle explains that the experiment she started back in Chicago is basically her son and that he is dying. She is shocked, more that the kid is still alive, and she could actually care less that Blue Beetle called him her son. She shows him all the experiments that she has created since she has been in this facility, and once the creatures have been grown to full human size, Animus will release them into the world as her own Manchurian candidates. Blue Beetle is unsure why she is telling him all this. It's like he's never heard of a villain monologue before. So she reiterates that she is going to use his cells as raw material for her new experiments. He is not for that. So he breaks out of the restraints and remote controls the bug to attack from the outside. Animus freaks out and makes a run for it, heading for the roof and setting the self-destruct on the facilities. Blue Beetle gets jumped by the crash test dummies that is in one of the hallways, but it stops him long enough for Animus to get to her hovercraft on the roof. She doesn't get far though, as the bug is blocking her escape, and because the dummies were no real threat, Blue Beetle is right there when Animus lands back on the platform. She attacks him, sending them both over the edge, but Blue Beetle is able to grab onto the ledge as Animus grabs onto his tattered costume. As he tries to twist his hand around to get a grip on hers, the fabric tears and she falls into the waters below. Blue Beetle heads back to Chicago and him standing Blue Beetle heads back to Chicago, and we see him standing in Garrison Slate's office. There we go. Use your words, Joe. Holding a disc of some of the data the bug was able to copy from Animus's computers. He hands it over to Slate in hopes that there might be something on it to help the kid. Okay, so let's wrap up the issue with what everyone else was doing. We find Takamoto during his interview at Statistical Occurrences Limited, or SOL, S-O-L, which is an insurance company that specializes in policies that involve the area of superheroes, supervillains, or any other such paranormal forces. The company is run by former Boy Commandos Alfie Twidget and his daughter Theodora, known as Twiggy. Little backstory here. Boy Commandos first appeared in Detective Comics in 1942 and was created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, and got their own quarterly title until 1945. Len Wein reintroduced them into DC continuity starting here, and was going to have them come into conflict with Klaus Cornelius, but unfortunately the Blue Beetle title ended before the storyline could play out, which kind of sucks, if I'm being honest. Anyway, Takamoto would be helping people out after a superpowered battle takes place. He is all for that. Speaking of Cornelius, it turns out he didn't have Catalyst kill Jeremiah Duncan, but put him in a suspended animation, which I guess they were finally able to figure out that he mailed the compound to himself in care of Cord Inc. Iranian branch. But apparently someone overthrew someone else in Iran at this time. My history is terrible, if I'm being honest, and Duncan couldn't retrieve it. So Cornelius's right-hand man, Sink, is sending Catalyst in to Iran to get the compound. Also in France, in some place called the Dome, someone named Belphegor is sending an operative named Flordelis out to shut down Cornelius Krieg. Again, I think this is all storylines that would have come in the future, but doesn't get played out. Lastly, Melody Case is fed up with Ted never being at work. She makes an ominous phone call to someone. But next up, the next issue is a Millennium crossover. So could it be tied to that? I'm not sure. I don't think it is. But I've never read Millennium, so I don't know. But that's it. That's all we got. Honestly, these issues, they were entertaining. Knowing that there's storylines in play that don't get paid off is kind of annoying. It does kind of suck. But ultimately these issues weren't terrible. But they weren't great though either. Like I'm not jonesing to put these in my collection, you know? But they weren't bad. They were fun to read, and I think there's only this was 19. I think there's only like 24 issues total, and there's only two issues that are tie-ins to Millennium. So after 20 and 21, there's only three issues left. So I know I'll have a handful of issues after Millennium of a couple different titles. I may just do like a bundle of books and just kind of jumble them together for an episode, but I'll worry about that later after the fact. For this one, for this Blue Beetle titles, they're fine. They're enjoyable. Yeah, it's kind of fun. Seeing Dan Garrett come back was kind of cool. Didn't know that was a thing. Didn't know he came back to life for a bit. Having somebody that knows, other than like other heroes, knows that Blue Beetle, who Blue Beetle is an interesting action. It's interesting play. So I can't wait to see how that plays out with Fisher. But yeah, no. Other than that, this was fun. I know my next read, because I'm a shrill for trying to keep things in the zeitgeist, my next read is going to be Fantastic Four, some older Fantastic Four reads. So, hope everybody looks forward to that. Because I know the older stuff is not great. And, just reading it currently, it's something else. So, until next time, thank you all. And, we'll see you then.